Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and a full house as we are celebrating our first episode of Supply Chain Now, powered by Apex Atlanta. Stone, you excited about this?
I most certainly am. This is going to be a fantastic segment. We're going to visit with a lot of folks this morning. But first up, let's introduce our good friend, Scott Luton. What's happening, man?
Hey, good morning. How are y'all doing?
Good.
Great to be here for our first pilot episode with the new Supply Chain Now Radio featuring the Apex Atlanta team, several of which we have here with us today.
I know, you got a full house.
Full house, that's right. We need a little more elbow room.
Now, you want to talk a little bit about supply chain, why that's important?
Pardon?
Why is supply chain important to Georgia?
Oh, wow. That is a tough question. We're going to have to designate the next 2 months to tackle
really
that question.
Flesh
probably.
That out, huh?
So, in a very small nutshell, supply chain is how business gets done in this modern day of global trade. So, seat at the table truly for the first time or at most. Let me start over. We have a seat at the table, and arguably for the first time, really the history of business. And nothing happens without supply chain. So that's really what this whole series will be dedicated to. Supply Chain Now Radio, powered by Apex Atlanta, which has been established here in the Atlanta market for over 50 years. Our monthly radio show is going to really focus on bringing leading supply chain professionals, practitioners, leaders, subject matter experts to the radio show, to the table, so to speak, to tackle some of the toughest issues and challenges that supply chain professionals all encounter on a week-in, week-out basis. So we've got a full slate of folks today for our pilot episode, and we're really pleased to lead off with our president, our fearless president, Chris Barnes, which we'll turn over to
all
you.
Right, Chris, welcome.
Yep, thank you, Lee. Thank you, Scott. Yeah, Apex... If you're not familiar with the organization, it's about 60-year-old professional non-for-profit organization based out of Chicago with many different affiliates, or we call them chapters around the country. One of the largest chapters in the country. We have about 680, 700 members plus or minus. It varies by month. But what we're really trying to do is get supply chain thought leaders together, practitioners, and share ideas, improve their corporate supply chains for better performance, as well as helping individual performances, whether it's finding jobs, finding resources for jobs, or just, developing, the thought leadership around supply chain management.
You're the president of the chapter here?
Yeah, local chapter. So we're all volunteer driven leadership. So anybody that wants to get involved, enhance their professional or professional development skills, get, more involved from a leadership perspective. It's a good way to do that. Also, a lot of companies like to see their employees get involved. It helps them professionally become better facilitators, better leaders within their organization.
Now, as president, do you have kind of a vision of how you'd like to kind of evolve?
Yeah, thanks, Larry. So our vision is Apex Atlanta will be or is the go-to association for supply chain for professionals to learn, engage, and share. And we support that, Larry, with a mission of fostering the advancement of end-to-end supply chain management through a body of knowledge, which is an important piece of what we are. Innovative research systems and methods to create value for customers, members, friends, and organizations. So we do part of what we do is deliver education and training for professionals in supply chain management.
Is there continuing education? Is that part of the organization?
It is. So we're kind of like the CPA for supply chain professionals, if that makes sense. While it's not regulatory driven, it is a recognized certification that you can get, put letters after your name. So if you're interviewing for a job, I've heard that sometimes that puts you at the top of the stack of resumes if you have the certifications.
And then part of your job is to facilitate some of this learning. Some of it is to facilitate networking so people can work together. Is that an element of
it as
well?
Yeah, it's several components of what we offer. A big piece is the education piece, whether it's for an individual to develop their personal skills or corporate training where we'll go in, for example, Americold or UPS or a big corporation where they'll say, we want to train, 20 of our people on thought leadership and how to improve our supply chain internally. But also, it's also a piece of networking. So we have dinner meetings, lunch meetings, seminars where people can come out, you know, for a nominal fee and network with their peers.
And that some people can use that to get new jobs or just learn about the industry.
Yeah, there's always people out there, whether it's salespeople that are out trying to meet new contacts or new companies. If it's people looking for jobs, whether they're underemployed or between opportunities, mm-hmm. or just there to learn on a specific topic.
Now, do you partner with the universities as well?
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. You ask about supply chain in Georgia. I think one of the reasons we are such a prominent supply chain organization here is obviously Georgia Tech has a big influence from the academia side as well as some of the brightest students around. So we have several universities that about 100 of our members, I had mentioned 680, 700 members, about 100 of those are students. Mm-hmm. And the key thing with students is student membership is free. So in my view, I remember back when I was in college, anything free was good.
Yes.
especially if it helped me, you know, get a job. Well, you know, sure. Maybe if you're a freshman, you might not be thinking about that. But if you're a senior, it's a good opportunity to get out and get those credentials associated to you.
And then the students, when they participate, are they're going just to kind of observe, or there's programming just for students?
Well, it's mostly the observational side, but as we have a guest today with us, they can get more involved, especially just depending on the personalities. Mm-hmm. But we do encourage volunteers at our meetings to come out and do specific roles and specific tasks. We work with the professors, really, is what drives the student involvement. I mean, students, as I said, although it's free, there tends to be more of a shorter term vision around what to do. And if it's not, you know, fun or education related, then they're probably not going to do it. So
right.
We try to work through the professors to get the professors to encourage involvement.
Now, when you're, so part of it's education, part of it's networking. How much of it is, you know, trying to get more companies involved and more engagement with the industry?
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. We're here basically to serve individuals, but generally individuals through their corporate, through their jobs. So mm-hmm. one example is we have a guest with us today, Elba. She's with UPS. She was very generous last year. She's actually, I think it was the member of the year for us in terms of getting UPS involved and sponsoring our events, hosting the facility, fantastic venue. So part of what we try to do is get, we're very fortunate to have several Fortune 500 companies here.
That are in the supply chain. I mean,
that are in that space. Right. Yeah. Delta, Home Depot, UPS, for example. So that we basically can meet within their organizations. It makes it a little bit easier for their employees maybe to meet right after work, as opposed to having to drive mm-hmm. to the perimeter or drive downtown. They can meet at their office.
So now what's in it for them? Like, why do they want to get involved?
The corporations, it's better for them. Obviously, the better your employees are at identifying improvements in the supply chain, you can hopefully implement those. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of two-pronged. Corporations, generally we see people, if they're doing team-based training, it's to help their employees become, you know, better communicators. And sometimes it's just more of a team-based exercise. So mm-hmm. they send people through the training. Obviously, some of our training, it can last months. So maybe a day or two a week for a couple of months, and you're putting them, all the people together. That's a big piece of it, is the team training.
If I can add a couple points around the market here in Georgia to your initial opening question, mm-hmm. Lee. Georgia is a logistics and manufacturing state. It's been for several years in a row the voted number one state to do business in. And I would argue the big piece of that is the logistics infrastructure that supply chain practitioners and professionals know and deal with every day, from the Port of Savannah, which is one of the fastest growing ports in North America, to obviously we all know about the airport here in Atlanta, and not just the passenger traffic, but the cargo traffic, the interstate system, the inland ports that they're building out. Georgia is a wonderful state to do business in, and all of those factors and many others are several of the things that are fueling Apex Atlanta's growth, but more importantly, the need to provide today's supply chain professional with the latest and greatest technologies, best practices, and skill sets to enable businesses to use supply chain as a true competitive advantage.
And the way that you see this show is to kind of spotlight some of the good work that's going on?
Absolutely. Great way of putting it. We want to give the market, the leaders, the technologies, the companies, a vehicle and a voice. And we also, while doing that, we want to tackle leading issues of the day that mm-hmm. should be tackled.
And so, talent. companies need to attract and retain talent. So I think that's going to be a big part of this radio show.
So Elba, welcome. Why don't you introduce Elba?
Yeah, that'd be great. So before I do, I want to thank our fearless leader, Chris Barnes, for his vision and his leadership. Lip service is not something we get.
That's a lot of sucking up, Scott. pump the brakes here a little bit.
Hey, for a free roll.
As the number two, sucking up is a big part of my job. But Chris has really brought a breath of fresh air to a chapter that's been around the market for a long time. So we appreciate that. So with that, all that said, I do want to introduce or announce a big piece of news, which is an exciting new initiative for our chapter. The Elba Pareja Gallagher is a 20-year supply chain leader and founder and CEO of ShowMe50.org. And on that latter note, ShowMe50.org is a wonderful, relatively new, I want to say 2 or 3 years old, startup nonprofit, which does tackle a true challenge in our industry, whether it's supply chain or manufacturing or really the greater business community. And that's focused on really two key things, strategies of inclusion and tackling the gender gap. So with all that said, Apex Atlanta, which has been serving the Metro Atlanta area for over 50 years, is very pleased to formally partner with ShowMe50.org to better serve our members, the local industry, and the local Atlanta area. As we mentioned, supply chain professionals are leaders. We make things happen. And part of this partnership, we want our organization to lead the effort in addressing the gender gap that exists in today's industry. In the big picture, our partnership will be all about embracing and executing strategies of inclusion. But specifically, we're going to be partnering with ShowMe50.org to strengthen our engagement of women in APIX and in greater industry. We're going to be working to provide professional and leadership development opportunities for women in our programming. And what I'm really excited about, we're going to be working with Elba and ShowMe50.org to develop a program designed to modernize board-level leadership and behaviors. From what we have experienced in person, some of the issues there, to a lot of the conversations we've had out in the marketplace with other boards and nonprofit organizations, unfortunately, we get caught into the trap of doing business like it's 1982. And with a lot of those behaviors that go along with that. So part of our strategic partnership with ShowMeFits.org is we're going to be changing that not only in our APIX supply chain space, but we're going to be working with other boards to change it for them as well. So with all that said, I'm going to turn over to Elba Pareja Gallagher with ShowMe50.org.
Thanks.
Welcome, Elba.
Was any of that true, Elba?
All of it.
Did he get it right?
He did. He's fabulous.
So now, Elba, you founded this organization. What compelled you to found this organization?
Well, as Scott said, I've been working in transportation for 20 years. And even before that, I worked in the insurance business. I have seen and heard stories over and over about women's experiences at work. And I felt that I was in a unique position through the roles that I've held to be able to change that. And I embarked on my own study of what's going on with gender at work and came up with a very unique program to creating a grassroots movement of employees to compel and influence change in their companies.
So can you talk about where you used to work?
I still work, actually.
Still
I'm a proud UPSer.
Okay, so you're part of UPS, which is a very large organization.
Absolutely. But all over this industry and manufacturing and supply chain, there's just a great shortage of talent. And I sometimes think that many companies are sort of filling their talent pool from just 50% of the pool rather than looking at 100%. And the skills are out there. We just have to be more intentional about including women and people who are different in our networks and really tapping into their skills.
Now, what kept you, why'd you choose this path in your career? Like when you were in college, like you could have picked any industry, but you picked a male-dominated industry.
It's so interesting. Well, quite frankly, I think they're most male-dominated, especially if you look at the top, right? The people who are running companies are mostly men. But I started in working in insurance, then finance, worked my way up. And so it wasn't an intentional choice, but back in 2012, I decided to sort of reinvent myself and find more opportunities. And that's when I discovered APIX, became certified in supply chain and have loved it ever since. So it's a
and
great field.
And that's when
field.
You started working for UPS?
No, I've been working for UPS.
For a while.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to know what's entailed in getting certified. Yeah, tell us about that.
It is very challenging. It yeah. requires a lot of reading and learning and studying and passing exams and demonstrating your knowledge of the body of work. That is the body of knowledge that's part of the APICS curriculum. And it is global organization certified. You know, many people are certified, so.
But it's a big deal. It means something. It has some ramifications, some positive implications for your career as you continue to move
forward. Absolutely. Not only do you know more and are able to advise others and lead, but you're also able to absolutely get some recognition from having passed a certification exam.
Now, at UPS, you could have done this internally as an internal organization, but you chose to do it on your own and spin it out to Show Me 50.
Yes, the Show Me 50 is my own initiative.
Right.
Something I did on my own because I'm so passionate about it. And I want to thank Chris and Scott for giving me this opportunity.
And UPS also for allowing it, right? Because that's part of the deal too, isn't it?
So this is my own organization.
Right.
We're here to really advance the standing of women across all companies,
right.
Leadership positions. Let me tell you a little bit about how the program works. It's a grassroots program.
Right.
We've developed a lot of tools.
Mm-hmm.
We call them toolkits that enable education of employees so that they can become more comfortable talking about gender. You know, here in this room, if we look around, there's 7 people participating and only 2 are women. And actually, that's a little bit better than a lot of averages, roughly 28-30%. But what we need to do is really feel comfortable about talking about gender and expanding our networks to include more women. And so what we're doing is enabling that, both in organizations like APICS, where we're going to really accelerate the adoption of gender initiatives to help expand opportunities for women, and also to engage and increase membership, to help APICS grow and help students like Charu, who's joining us, which you'll hear from later. In fact, we were just talking before the show that she was at a recent conference, and she's a young person, Georgia Tech student, and it's 2017, and she just attended an operations research conference. And Charu, if you don't mind, just a couple minutes, what was the experience in terms of gender diversity?
Yeah, for sure. Elba, thanks for letting me talk. I went to an operations research conference called NEMFEST, which had the world's brightest operations researchers, and it was mostly men. It was around 300 people, and I recall about maybe 3 or 4 women, including me, at this conference. Most of them were older men. So I do understand how it feels like a boys' club, especially in mathematics and technology and all these spaces, specifically like supply chain. So,
but you're at Georgia Tech. Is that what it feels like there as well?
Surprisingly, not really. I actually don't really notice the ratio as much as it's, you know, rumored. But my major is actually pretty close to 50%, luckily. Mm-hmm. But outside, in the industry, it's very obvious that it's very different.
Now, Alba,
ask a follow-up question to Charu, but would you argue that the ratios at Georgia Tech and how they don't reflect industry are because of the very intentional policies that Georgia Tech has put in place to ensure a diverse approach to their technical programs?
That is an interesting question. And actually, I'm not really sure that I have the background to answer that. But on the same note, I believe that actually admissions is gender blind. So there are some talks about how that could potentially be like the reasoning behind it. But actually, I've heard that admissions is gender blind. So
absolutely. Georgia Tech is doing a very intentional job of ensuring that they have more gender balance, as well as diversity in general. So that's one example of the things that can be done and are being done. And it's not rocket science, although there are scientists at Georgia Tech.
Now, is Show Me 50, is that only for supply chain? Or are you doing
Absolutely
this?
Absolutely not.
So that's for any organization, any industry.
Industries. That's right. And what it's about is about education and really mm-hmm. enabling employees to have the knowledge and skills to go back and influence change in their companies.
So we do some work with the Women in Technology group, and they have similar challenges.
Absolutely.
And initiatives. So you work with
Sandy Welfare over at WIT. Yeah. she's terrific, and the organization is great.
So there are some things happening here in Atlanta that seem to be trying to address these
Absolutely.
Issues.
Mm. But I think a lot of it is awareness. You know, a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about it. A lot of times I like to start with the facts, keep it out of the emotional realm, and really remind people of what the statistics are. So I don't know if you're aware, but any guesses on what percentage of CEOs in the S&P 500 are women?
Mm. 12.
12. Anybody else?
Yeah, I'd say under 10.
Under 10. How about under 5?
Wow.
Roughly right. 5, give and take. You know, we have CEOs in and out, but around 5%, and it's been that way for a long time. And that's not just in the S&P, and you know, of course, that's across all industries. Mm-hmm. The manufacturing and supply chain industry as well is challenged, but there is some interesting and optimistic information coming out. I have a study here that actually was sponsored by APIX and the Manufacturing Institute and Deloitte, and they surveyed across industries and found that retail, life sciences, for example, are more encouraging of women in the field, but manufacturing, under 10%, felt that people were encouraging women in that field. And so we have a lot of opportunity, right. And that's why we're joining in this alliance. What can we really do, both here in Georgia, and then who knows where this can lead, right, Scott?
That's right.
Now, aren't women opening their own businesses at a faster pace than men?
They are. That's an excellent point. Women-owned businesses and women-led businesses are huge. In fact, I'm participating in planning a Canadian consulate conference in October here in Atlanta mm-hmm. that's about women in business across North America and how do we help women export. Scott talked about trade, you know, so they go hand in hand.
Now, the fact that women are starting their own businesses at a rapid clip and much higher than the average of CEOs, why do you think that is, that at Fortune 500 or the super large enterprise level, they're not kind of there as much as men, but at the lower level, the starting phase, they're equal or more than men?
Yeah. In fact, some of the reasons that women leave is because they don't feel included. They don't feel they have the same opportunities as men. They need more flexibility to manage their, you know, families and their complicated endeavors. And so I think part of the reason is they leave. Women also in organizations don't make it to the top for many of the same reasons. They don't feel included. They're not mentored and coached in the same way mm-hmm. that men are because they have stronger networks. And so some of the things that we invite men to do is to engage women more, to be aware of who's around you when you're in a meeting and there are not very many women, to recognize that and ask yourself, well, gosh, what could I do differently next time to invite a woman, to coach a woman, to encourage women to participate?
If I can, Lee, if I can interject for a minute, I like how you, Elba, you talk about taking emotion out of it. Well, if I can run counter to that for a second, because I want to go back to something that Charu said about how it can feel like a boys' club. And a lot of folks in general don't have the confidence and intelligence that Charu has. And as a father of two daughters, it would pain me to hear my daughter say the same thing. And because it makes me think of some of the challenges and some of the things that may impact her level of confidence of what she can do and what she can't do. And you know, one of the things we talk about, that my wife and I talk about regularly, is while we want our daughters to do big things, we want them to know they can do big things. And that's a big part of the reason that this is so important.
That's right. But beyond just confidence building for women, it absolutely is a partnership with institutions, companies. As we were talking with Georgia Tech, why do they have such good numbers? Right. And Charu doesn't even, you know,
notice,
realize,
right?
It's because companies must take intentional actions. And there are 4 proven solutions. So you have to bear with me and let me get these out.
Right? Away.
Number 1 is gender bias education. Companies must train their employees, not just on general bias, but gender bias and gender awareness. The second one is transparency in talent management and objective performance evaluation systems. So she talked about gender neutral hiring practices or screening practices, right? Those types of things have to be implemented. The third one is gender neutral workplace flexibility. And what that means is that both men and women need to feel comfortable taking time off. If it's a policy in your company, men should take time off as well. Mm-hmm. And then the last, and really it's the most important, is executive accountability. it has to start at the top. We were just talking about PwC again before we walked in here. They are doing a phenomenal job, and it's because their CEO is out there along with all their senior leadership talking about gender and the importance of increasing the representation of women at the top.
All right, so I'm on record for having distinct gender bias. I think women are smarter, they're more collaborative, they're better with money, they're more comfortable in their own skin, they're more relationship-oriented. I would rather work with a woman given a choice any day
awesome.
Of the week.
Awesome, Charu, we are in. Are you hiring? Are you promoting?
Both.
Are you saying this because your niece is in the room?
Oh, that's true.
Well, I might have got a little mileage out of that as well. So if you're just now joining us, we're talking with some of the best and brightest from the supply chain arena and Scott Luton. But no, this is very important work, all kidding aside. And we mentioned, you know, our collaboration, our work with women in technology as well. And one of the things that we continue to hear from those folks when they come in and visit with us is we do have this gap. We've got to also work on continuing to get young women interested in these STEM careers and these
supply chain. Absolutely. And again, we have to be brave and courageous and speak up and not be afraid that we might say the wrong thing. Right? We all just have to collaborate and say, "Hey, how do we influence change?"
Now, did you have female mentors? Yourself?
I've had female and male mentors. I think that I particularly, my choice is to have male mentors because companies are run by men, politics are by men at the top. We have to learn how to navigate that world. And so I have found it extremely helpful to have male mentors.
Now, is there any job shadowing or mentoring program in your organization? Is that part of it, the Show Me 50? Is that part of the methodology?
So for Show Me 50, we run Lean In Circles. So do you guys know Facebook? The COO of Facebook is Sheryl Sandberg. She wrote the book Lean In about getting women to lean into their careers. And one part of the program is Lean In Circle. So we meet in person in Sandy Springs, actually, once a month. And we use that as an opportunity to teach leadership. We certainly mentor, coach, and also, of course, we teach people how to talk about gender in a collaborative way when they go back to the office to influence change. So I have to get a plug in to everybody to check out showme50.org. Our invitation to our Lean In Circle is on the website.
And then for showme50.org, what are the things you need the most? Do you need more participants, more members?
We need participants. We need alliances like this fantastic one with Apex, because what we want to do is we want to amplify the voice and go back into companies, because what we're doing is closing the gender gap one corporation at a time. So we need to get into companies.
And then so when you're getting into, like, how do you start a conversation with a company?
Well, we start a conversation with their employees. And then
the employees go out and evangelize.
That's exactly right.
And you give them some of the tools and language to help them
Absolutely.
Navigate.
We have scripts, PowerPoint presentations, and we find it very useful to work with the employee resource groups, like the women's groups, Hispanic resource groups, and they're very, they embrace these types of initiatives.
So you're targeting the employee as the, for membership?
That's right. It's a grassroots change organization because then, pressure works, right?
So at the grassroots level.
That's right.
And it kind of goes up. Now for you, and when you started, how did you start getting the word out about this?
Word of mouth through my networks. In fact, as Chris said, Apex is a great organization for building your networks. And so through meeting professionals in the community.
Because you just happened to be a member of this group before.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
and then so you started this initiative and then you're like, hey, this is
it's perfectly aligned. Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah. One of the things, Lee, we try to do as an association is promote other associations around town. There are several other supply chain associations, but also organizations like Elvis, you know, we try to give them a platform for exposure. One of the things that she, as an example of, you know, getting women more involved, we spoke about it earlier, networking events where people can come and share their ideas.
Margarita Mondays, Tequila Tuesdays, exactly, Whiskey Wednesday.
Non-funded.
Check out our program of events.
But no, so it's speakers that come in and share their ideas or concepts or success stories. And we do 8 of those formal events a year, and this past year ends in June. We actually called it Women in Supply Chain was our theme, influenced by Elba's organization.
Wow.
And every lead speaker was a woman.
Mm. All right. I want to hear more from Charu. This is so exciting to me. It's inspiring. I am a little concerned that your microphone is going to fall off its stand. So we'll blame it on Scott messed it up, but we'll make Scott fix it.
If I can introduce Charu real quickly.
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, please.
So one of the things that our chapter does is sponsor Supply Chain Day at Georgia Tech. And this is a program 3 or 4 times a year where we sponsor a lot of employers coming on. They're looking for leading supply chain talent. And that's where we met Charu and some of our partners. Charu is entering her third year as an undergraduate student at Georgia Tech. She's also an entrepreneur and board member with a group called Oculogix. And to cap it off, she's an APIC student member. So we conducted a recent webinar last week on the topic of augmented reality and supply chain. And we want to really start the conversation. Charu is light years ahead of me understanding supply chain technology. And we really want to kind of pick her brain on what is augmented reality and how is it used in supply chain.
Thank you so much for the introduction, Scott. Augmented reality and virtual reality, these are buzzwords that we hear all the time, mm-hmm. especially in the space. And it's very interesting, but they're thought of as distinctive technologies. But I think it's more helpful to think of them as more of a continuum. So virtual reality is on one side with more immersiveness. So virtual reality takes you to a completely new environment.
So that's you're wearing the goggles.
Exactly.
Right. The headgear.
Yeah, actually, I went to a virtual reality, this is a little off topic, but I went to a virtual reality arcade. So those are a thing, and I highly recommend those as well. Very fun. And then augmented reality, on the other hand, is when objects interact with the environment itself. So these are digital objects, like holograms, that can actually play a role in the environment. And then there's mixed reality, which is slightly different than augmented reality. Augmented reality is more of a two-dimensional plane, while mixed reality is a three-dimensional plane. So if you're familiar with technology like the Microsoft HoloLens, that is mixed reality technology. So just that was a brief introduction.
So give me an example of augmented reality. Where would somebody see that nowadays?
So actually, if you've played Pokemon Go, you've already probably seen it. It's also on Google Glass if you've seen that.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, the two-dimensional overlay onto the environment.
Right. So like for Pokemon Go, I have my phone and mm-hmm. I hold it up, and then it looks like there's a Pokemon there.
Exactly.
In the restaurant.
Yeah.
Right?
So two-dimensional.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's what you're referring to when you talk about augmented reality?
Yeah. So actually, we use augmented reality as more of an umbrella term to describe both mixed reality and augmented reality mm-hmm. because there's only a nuanced difference between them. So when I say augmented reality, I really mean like just any digital objects that can interact with the environment, whether it's in two dimensions or three dimensions.
So now how does it work in supply chain?
So there's multiple different use cases. That's a great question, by the way. There's multiple different use cases that we're investigating and really interested in. So for example, order picking, bin packing, material handling, remote inspection. The list goes on, but our first interest was order picking. So,
okay, so like walk us through the order picking. How's it done the olden days? How are they doing it?
So
before augmented reality, yesterday.
Order picking actually is a very complicated task. It accounts for up to 60% of the operational costs of warehousing fulfillment centers. So there's multiple different methods. There's pick by paper, pick by voice, pick by light, pick by tablet or any other technological device. So pick by paper is the most generic one. It's very cheap. You know, you just have a pick list. You go to where you're supposed to go, pick up what you need.
Just look at the list.
Exactly.
Just grab it, put it somewhere.
Exactly. Put in your cart and you're gone. So that's pick by paper. Pick by voice, that's a newer technology. I think it probably came out in the 2000s-ish. Not exactly sure. But that is when you are wearing a headset and it tells you where to go. You have some feedback between the system and yourself. So you say that I'm at the location ready and it interacts with you essentially like that. Then there's pick by light, and that is and a very expensive. It's about $1,500 per square foot. So it's very well suited for high density situations, but it's not necessarily suited for when things are farther apart, which can actually account for up to 55 to 60% of order picking is routing and navigation. Backtracking a little bit, pick by voice actually is about the same time. It takes about the same time as paper, which is pretty time intensive. it does reduce errors, but it is around the same time of paper. So most of the benefits of it is just error reduction. So augmented reality, it has multiple benefits. For example, it's cheaper than all these other options, or not cheaper, but more flexible than all these other options. Mm-hmm. Cheaper than Pick by Light, definitely. And it's, like I said, more flexible. It reduces the time it takes as well as the errors.
So do I wear goggles or?
It's really cool too.
I have to wear like special glasses. Like, are you using the Google Glass technology?
So actually, we started on Microsoft HoloLens, but if you've seen Google I/O, there's been some recent developments in the past week, actually. And Google I/O at the keynote, Clay Baver, who is the vice president of their virtual reality at Google, he was presenting Google's new visual positioning system, or VPS. Mm-hmm. So the use case they essentially presented was at a Lowe's, and they had multiple nodes, and it would essentially show you where to go inside the Lowe's. So what we're developing is something similar to that. I'm not actually sure much about what is involved in that. So we're trying to learn a little bit more about that because we have some contacts at Google. But augmented reality is the fundamental idea here is augmented reality is an emerging technology that has potential to really change the space.
So it's going to be the person going to wear some sort of a glasses and then they're going to see something appear that isn't there in real life, but it'll help them find what they're looking for faster.
Yes. So actually the medium is a little bit, it's actually shifting a little bit. So mm-hmm. we're not sure if it'll be glasses now because...
Could be contact lenses.
I meant more of phones.
Phones.
But
it's another way.
Yeah.
But isn't another implication of this is you can drop me in a warehouse, no training, whatever, and say, exactly. Go get everything that has a yellow dot on it because my glasses or whatever are going to show a yellow dot. Correct?
Exactly. So this is an incredible technology that we're hoping to implement in this space.
So you guys invented it?
Huh?
Did your company that you're with invented this?
What? Augmented reality?
No, Oculogix.
Yeah, along with the internet. Y'all did all the internet in the early years. And then
yeah, I mean, it's casual.
Now, Oculogix.
Yeah, so we've actually created a order picking system. So... Mm-hmm. Our system is a prototype, and we're actually creating a proof of concept with Walmart this summer. So that is what we're working on.
So if I can, at one of our last dinner meetings at UPS headquarters, which Elba helped us facilitate, Charu and her partner Sarthik came on stage and gave a spontaneous demo at the behest of Chris Barnes over here. And they stole, I mean, it was like a rock and roll show. Folks wanted more. They wanted a lot more. So it's a really neat application. It's fascinating to think about all the various applications throughout, not just supply chain, but throughout the business community. And Charu, you're looking for more sites to demo and conduct simulations and this, so on and so forth?
Yes. So one of the fundamental things we want to do is prove out that this is viable. So a lot of the things that we've heard from people in business is that it's too early. And we don't think that's the case because we've seen this in lab and we've seen it in facilities and we know it's a viable option and it seems wasted to let it go. So we are looking for facilities if you guys are interested or to just continue conversations about this because the awareness is what really drives this technology to adoption. And what we really want to see is this being used in everyday life.
Terrific. And if I can segue a final question or two for you, Charu, before we turn over to Mr. Chris Copenhaver, is can you talk about your APIX experience? You're a student member. Mm-hmm. You're a relatively new member. Why join APIX? Why be a part of it, the APIX community?
Thanks so much, Chris. Scott, sorry. I'm a little nervous.
You've been called worse.
Yeah, APIX has been a great experience. Like I said, the support system by the professionals in the industry is incredible. We've had multiple meetings with people we've met through APIX. And the student chapter at Georgia Tech, actually, one of my friends is the president, Karan Agarwal, and he's been super helpful with just promoting the webinar and just helping us talk to professionals. You guys have been really very supportive to the student community. And I think that any student should get involved because there's so much support here.
Adults, too.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, anyone should get involved.
It's important to note, I mean, Georgia Tech obviously has a big influence in the city, but we're also partnering with Kennesaw State, Clayton State, and several other associations around the city, mm-hmm. and actually around the state.
Fair point. Yep. All right. So next up, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. Taru, perfect. And to our audience, we are supply chain folks. We're not radio experts.
Well, you know, wait, you know what? Let me get Shrew one last question.
Sure.
If a company wanted to reach out to you guys, do you have a website or some way
we
of getting
do.
A hold of you?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for asking that. So yeah, it's www.oculogix.com. So just reach out. There's a form, or you could just email me at charu@gatech.edu. So
now on the website, does it have kind of any video or demo of what it looks like so they can see it in action a little
bit? It does. So actually on the first page, if you go down, it talks about the interest in order picking and it has a demo. So
good stuff. So companies that, what's the need, what's the pain they're having where this would be a good solution?
So the pain that we've investigated was order picking because
okay, so if a company is having a hard time or is frustrated by their order taking situation, they should at least explore it.
Yes. I think it's valuable to explore either way. Even if you don't have pain, it's important because we could find a use case because there's so many interesting use cases available. So,
All right, Scott, grab the mic.
Right. Thank you, Charu. Thank you very much for joining us. So in this first session, we've tackled not only the APIX Atlanta vision, we've tackled inclusive strategies and the gender gap. We've tackled a late breaking but fast growth technology. So we're moving at light speed. Now we're going to transition a bit over to a more of an executive level topic based off a new initiative that we started this program year. So with that said, I'm really pleased to bring on board Chris Copenhaver with Cushman & Wakefield. One of the things that we set out to do this year is really what is the value proposition for executives to get involved in the APIX community. So beyond establishing our first executive advisory board as a chapter, which Chris is a member of.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Appreciate your contribution there. We also kicked off a executive roundtable series, which started May 5th. And this is going to be a series that we do maybe quarterly, maybe three times a year. But our first topic was digital supply chain. So it connects well with some of our other conversations here. Chris's firm, Chris's co-lead of the F&B practice at Cushman & Wakefield. And we were really very pleased to have he and Cushman & Wakefield sponsor that May 5th Executive Roundtable event along with DHL Supply Chain. So now there's no shortage of, we could talk about digital supply chain, that notion all day long. But let's talk about some of your key lessons learned from that that roundtable event, Chris.
Thank you, Scott. You're going to put me up talking about digital supply chain after that.
That's a hard act to follow.
Tell us about the augmented reality part.
Let's send in the commercial real estate broker after that. Dumb it down.
Well, maybe a good starting point might be, and curious to get your take on this, where we started with that roundtable event is talking about just what does digital supply chain mean? Because there's a variety of definitions. There is the definition that Netflix and some of the new media organizations will probably define it as, and then there is, you know, whether it's UPSs or those companies with very traditional supply chains, there's probably a different way that they define digital supply chain. What was your take on kind of that definition phase of the discussion?
It was really the gathering of information as you're moving products from, you know, manufacturing to the end supply end user. How broad the amount of information that's out there and how you bring it in and how you process it is was a big part of that because there's so many different, you know, angles to look at a supply chain.
And the exchange points and the overall flow, the speed of flow.
Picking,
that's right. That came up as part of it. And the exchange of information that produces picking activities and that picking activities produce themselves. So Chris Barnes was also at the digital supply chain. Chris, talking about definition of what that phrase means. Any input from your end?
It's just visibility across the supply chain. That's one of the ways you're going to improve performance is seeing where your inventory is, you know, from the point of purchase to the point of delivery to your door. That's a big piece of digital supply chain.
one of the phrases that that came out that I think we've all agreed to produce T-shirts on and give the guy the license that gave the phrase, but garbage in, gospel out. So we talked about this notion where typically it's garbage in, garbage out, but one of the technology consultants I was at the roundtable talked about this notion where folks in various departments are putting information in the ERP platform, and rather than treat it as garbage out, you have executives in boardrooms that are standing on it and treating it as gospel. Any perspective that y'all want to share on that?
I think it's finally getting up to the C-suite where people are taking a look at it. Before, you know, talking about garbage in, it's really what you do with the information, because there's such a vast, you know, information from each one of the different people that participates in the supply chain. Now, with, you know, all the different, with supply chain being, you know, a C-suite job and everybody leaning on them for cost savings, all of that information going up to executives who are meeting on it and instituting, you know, future plans is where the gospel's coming out.
That's a great point. At the end of our executive roundtable session, we basically posed the question, what are your key takeaways, to our group of 25 executives that attended the event? And the garbage in, gospel out was probably the most popular, but something that Chris just mentioned there, where the supply chain profession is changing dramatically. It's not, these days, your supply chain professional is much more involved in the strategic side of the business. They're not leaned on just to get the best deal, but they're plugged into the big picture. And where are we going? And how, again, can we make our supply chain and our supply chain management a true competitive advantage in how we do business and leverage it out there to grow the business and to make us make the business better? The one of the other big learnings that came out of this discussion, it was said at last week's Georgia Logistics Summit. I think that was last week. My three kids mess with my memory quite a bit. Last couple weeks with the summit, they talked about how talent, supply chain, in the supply chain space, organizations are vying for talent in their supply chain against the technology industry more and more. And I think because of the notion of the digital supply chain and how it's changing supply chain management activities, that makes a lot of sense to me. So part of the discussion we had, Chris, was around, you know, the skill sets that the modern day supply chain professional needed, and by extension, how soon do we begin training?
I think you start training as early as possible, because a lot of the people that are in the job right now are the ones that are coming up for retirement. And there's with the digital, you know, age and everything that's coming in, you know, the younger generation, sorry, you know, they're more geared towards seeing all this information on a screen, where if you look at people that are, you know, in their 50s or 60s, they've been doing this and worked their way up the companies, and, you know, they handle all this, some of them, without a computer. Mm. So there's a lot of intellectual capital that's about to walk out the door in the industry, and tenured intellectual capital. And
so how are companies dealing with that? I mean, are they just
training programs like Georgia Tech?
Right, but that's what for the younger people. But how do they capture, like you said, these people that have been with the company 30 years, they've done it a certain way. Maybe the technology's changed, but some of that wisdom is still relevant.
Well, that's part of the part of the stuff that they're putting into the digital cloud about all this now.
But how do they get it out of the brain of this, senior person?
Torture.
That's a good way. You know, I would
upgraded retirement packages.
I would submit to you that unfortunately, many companies are not. They really aren't taking the time to document what, you know, all the tribal knowledge that 30 and 40 year veterans
are. They not documenting it because they don't think it's important, or they just don't have a way to do it?
I think it's different. Go ahead, Chris.
I think it's more, you know, these people have been in a role where they did not need all this different data in front of them. They understood site selection, you know, supply chain optimization. These were back of the envelope things that, you know, they had done for years and years and years. And now you have a newer generation that's coming in that, you know, sort of expects stuff to be, you know, fed to them instead of, you know, learning it. So it's hard to
What if we just give Elba a microphone and put it
yes,
on her?
Yes, please.
And then have her go talk to all these gray hairs, get the information, codify it, and then we'll augment the heck out of it, right, Charlie? And then Scott and the rest of us can understand it and do something
there
with it.
There we go. Well, and kind of kidding aside to your question, Lee, you know, I don't think it's not getting done, not because folks don't think it's important. I would argue that one of the biggest reasons it's not getting done is because it takes time to basically stop what you're doing and uncover the information and then document the information. And I don't know about anyone in this room, but documentation is not the top of the list of things I like to spend time on.
No,
but
that costs money to take people
money.
Off of what their jobs actually are.
Absolutely. We're turning out product, and we're not talking. As Charles spoke earlier about data, as we were outside in the waiting room, we're not talking about a couple sheets of data as well. It's a big, I mean, you think about your average size manufacturer, that's a ton of data that's got to be documented, a ton of process that has to be documented. So big challenge, but big opportunity. And hopefully the digital supply chain and the digitization of supply chain management activities will make this documentation easier. We'll see how we get that
on the out. On the supply side, Lee, one of the things that I think the state is doing well is getting younger students involved earlier on through the STEM program.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, 16, she happens to be, I signed her up as an APEX member. She is officially the youngest.
That is actually true. It's
youngest APEX member in history. Now, talk to me next year. We'll see what happens. But so one of the things that the state is doing is promoting, obviously, high school level, getting materials management, supply chain engineering concepts at that level. Also, the Georgia Manufacturing Appreciation Week, which is an economic development initiative, they actually have an art project where they reach out to the schools, middle school, junior schools, and high schools, and have an art contest. And they get the students there that win the prizes, and then they get exposed to the events and manufacturing from that perspective.
Right. So they're trying to engage the younger people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the tech schools.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's a great advantage
here in
the state of Georgia.
Schools as well?
Yeah.
Yes, the technical schools. They've been running programs like this for a long time, teaching people, you know, picking, you know, forklift driving.
Is there a shortage for those skills?
There is now. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the younger generation, they are the people that are out there working in a hot warehouse moving product.
Well, if you did it with drones or remote control, they would.
Yeah.
We could dedicate a month, day in and day out, show to the skills gap and to how it's
really
rippling through. Yeah. Because what you just mentioned, you know, the kind of the more traditional skill sets, those are absolutely in demand, and we've got a gap there. But then we start thinking about the digital side of the business and how that's evolving. We've got to get the talent that can do that into the industry. That's a huge challenge as well. So future topic for one of our next Supply Chain Now Radio segments. But on that note, if we can first want to thank Chris Copenhaver and Cushman Wakefield again for sponsoring that executive roundtable event, which kicked off the whole series on May 5th, and also for serving on our first pilot executive advisory board, which had about 23 different executives throughout a variety of industries, which consulted and advised a chapter on a number of different things, which is very successful. And I want to say we've already got our next executive roundtable set for August 23rd, which is going to be featuring our Company of the Year, Vonderlande Industries, and a case study on what they're doing in supply chain to do bigger and better things. So Blake Matthews, our VP of supply chain and procurement,
right.
I believe.
Yeah, that'll be a good event if you're interested. One of the cautions, though, is these executive roundtables are invitation-only events. Most of our other events are open.
Mm-hmm.
We try to keep them a bit more exclusive for different reasons. But, Blake's going to be talking about his supply chain transformation. He's been here about 2 years in the state. Their North American headquarters are up in Ackworth. He's come in. He's made a lot of changes. He's actually creating a lot of jobs, or his company's creating a lot of jobs in Georgia, and they're doing some pretty impressive things. He's going to tell us about his transformation.
Absolutely. Great event coming up. And Chris, thanks for talking about the invitation-only aspect. So on that note, there's lots of events we do have coming up that are not invitation-only events. I want to mention a couple of those before I turn it back over to any final thoughts and maybe a roundabout. So June 8th, we've got our next APEX Atlanta webinar on supply chain evolution.
now to 2030. So we've got Steve Hopper with Invisa Consulting and with the work Warehousing and Education Research Council going to be leading that one-hour webinar on how we expect supply chains to evolve now to 2030. On July 18th, we've got Bo Groover with the Effective Syndicate going to be walking us through three practical ideas for reducing inventory. Who's not looking for a way to reduce inventory, right? That it will be, again, July 18th. And both of these webinars are free events. They're free, convenient events. These are great, non-salesy, sheer content vehicles that we're trying to bring ideas, best practices, and subject matter expertise out to the market to help supply chain professionals and their organizations. And then finally, two last things I'll mention. September 12th is our kickoff event for the next program year. We're going to be partnering with the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, which is a big, fast-growth organization out there supporting manufacturing in Georgia. And we're going to have Trivia Night, which is a brand-new concept. Y'all heard anything related to the theme of Trivia Night?
No. First
time. Cutting edge. It's cutting edge. Now, we really want to make it a fun, big kickoff event.
Is it all supply chain work?
That's right. Supply chain trivia.
Supply chain trivia.
You know what? On that note, let me make very clear. This will not be supply chain trivia. This is going to be fun. Now, we're really excited about, you know, having a couple hundred people come out and enjoy networking with the APEX Atlanta chapter, the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance, and then, of course, our sponsors, ShowMe50.org, Vonderlande Industries, and TalentStream. So mark your calendars. The evening of September 12th, details to come. Finally, we didn't talk about this, but Elba mentioned the T word, talent. And talent is going to be discussed, I'm sure. Folks go to bed thinking about it, and they wake up thinking about it. It's huge for not just our industry, but across the board. So if for all our employers out there that are looking for supply chain-related talent, the APEX Atlanta website offers a free job board. So if you want to come out and post your job ad on our website, which we have almost 700 members in the supply chain community that are members of APEX, the APEX Atlanta chapter, and then we have a lot of folks that come out to events and check out our website. So a free channel. I would welcome you to post your job ads if you're looking for supply chain-related talent there. So with all that said, I'm going to turn it back over to our fearless leader, Chris Barnes, for any final thoughts.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. I just encourage anybody that's interested in developing professionally. We're always looking for volunteers to come in, either help set up events. We're doing things at Sweetwater Brewery, for example, just general networking. But it takes somebody to drive the initiative, to do the logistics and coordinate everything that happens. So if you're looking for volunteer opportunities, check out the website, www.apexatlanta.org. We're also interested in corporate sponsors that are willing to kind of help fund some of the things that we're doing. Also, if anyone's interested in training at a corporate level, we do corporate-wide classes as well as individual public classes. So I just encourage anybody to check out the website. And again, we do have current sponsors. For example, TalentStream is one of our annual sponsors, and they've been helping us with. We've been able to do a lot of things through their support.
So on that note, with the whole funding, we are a nonprofit and we exist to serve. And Chris, I know you touched on that early on, but we're here to help. We're here to help the individual supply chain professional. We're here to help their organizations. We're here to help folks in transition. We're here to help the next generation as they network and find opportunities to professionally develop. So however we can help, let us know. But yes, we are seeking additional sponsors so that we can do more and more for the Georgia logistics and manufacturing industry.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. This has been Atlanta Business Radio's first, the pilot episode of Supply Chain Now, powered by APEX Atlanta. And Chris, one more time before we wrap that website, if somebody wants to join or learn more about what's going on, APEX.
APEXAtlanta.org, APICSAtlanta.org.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time.